second to be here. So let's see, this is my title. It's basically includes two or three topics. One is classifying states, and the other is how you can distinguish different states. Well, in condensed matter physics, we have many, many different phases. And here I listed some of them. And here in this box, I have a big box for classical phases. And I also have a box for the quantum phases. And my main interest today is quantum phases. And in quantum phase, I just have three categories for simplicity. One is gapless phases, and the other is gap phases. And there's a quantum critical point separating different phases. And for classical phases, basically, I don't speak much about it, but if you ask experimentalists, so my main interest is quantum systems, like systems of electrons, and the systems of many spins, systems of bosons. I want to speak about different phases. So here, just for simplicity, I want to roughly classify these two phases. Phases in terms of if it is a classical, mainly, or if it is a quantum. Although many different phases can be understood in terms of classical physics, the phases which interest me most is basically quantum phases. So I just listed many phases, but I don't want to explain all these phases in detail, but I just want to ask very last question. So in classical phases of condensed matter physics, basically we can use a symmetry principle and the order parameter associated with symmetry breaking. It is the paradigm known as Landau-Ginzburg paradigm. And my main theme in these talks is the physics beyond Landau-Ginzburg paradigm. So in Landau-Ginzburg theory of quantum, critical phenomena, we have a symmetry group specifying phases, which is the global symmetry of order parameter, like or spins up. Or if you have more complex order parameter, you have a different group. And you can understand the phases in terms of symmetries. And the quantum critical theory is basically described by the symmetry breaking of this symmetry group. But for the phases I listed here, let me just say one example. One example is the quantum Hall physics, like fractional quantum Hall, integer quantum Hall physics. It is a very defined phase, but in terms of symmetry, you don't see any pronounced pattern of symmetry breaking. It's a very futuristic state. So this is the type of phase I'm interested in most. So once this Landau-Ginzburg paradigm breaks down, there's the obvious question we want to ask. So since symmetry principle is not operative here, what is the governing principle to distinguish different phases? So we want to have a reasonably complete, reasonably exhaustive classification of different quantum phases. Actually, we are very far away from here, but at this first part of my talk, I limit my interest in free electron systems, and also some free electron systems with some interactions. There we have a reasonable classification. That's the first topic of my talk. And the knowing there are many different phases which are not distinguishable in terms of other parameter, there'd be another obvious question. What is a good way to tell good way to distinguish these phrases. We have many phrases, and sometimes people are very clever to find a good description in terms of particular systems. But is there any, let's say, very convenient recipe to tell in which quantum phase we are in? Is there any very versatile indicator or analog of other parameter in these quantum phases? That is the second part of my talk. And since I have three talks, I have roughly 75 slides prepared, so maybe 25 for each. And if today I want to basically speak about classification of so-called topological insulator and superconductors. That's for today. And for tomorrow, I will speak about some topic about interactions and also the use of so-called entanglement entropy to distinguish different phases of matter. And for the third day, I want to speak about the very convenient way to compute this entanglement entropy in field theory in both gapped and gapless phases. There I use the notion of holography. So that's basically outline my talk. And please interrupt whenever you have a question. Okay. So so today I want to, let me just go back a little. I just focus on the gapped phases today. And I also limit myself to the phases without interactions. So if you don't include interactions, you can reduce the number of states you are interested in, then you have a reasonably complete classification of phases. So, well, I already said there's the some topological states, so-called topological insulators, topological superconductor, but I didn't say what these states are. So let me first introduce the notion of topological insulators and topological superconductors. And then and I also want to explain there the governing principle to classify all these different insulators and the superconductors. So the first part of my talk was done in collaboration with these people all over the world. So in the West Coast of the United States, I have Hideaki Obuse, and he's in Chicago. But for the West Coast, I have people from UC Berkeley and UC Santa Barbara, and some people in Europe, mainly in Switzerland. And I have three Japanese collaborators. So let me first go very slowly. So the prototype example of topological insulator is an integer quantum Hall effect. It has been around almost 30 or 20 years by now. So it's a phase of electron system in two spatial dimensions, with strong breaking of time reversal symmetry by applied magnetic field. So here the caricature of the system. So you have a two-dimensional system with electrons, and there's the magnetic field, very strong magnetic field perpendicular to this plane. So what is interesting in this phase is it's an insulator. First of all, it's an insulator because of the lambda quantization. So here's the energy spectrum. So because of the applied magnetic field, energy spectrum looks very simple. You have just a bunch of straight lines, and this label is some quantum number. But there's no dispersion. Electron spectrum is completely flat, and each these lambda levels are separated by a huge gap, which is set by the applied magnetic field. So it's an insulator, so one might think, whenever your chemical potential is in the gap, you don't see any state. So you might think That's a very boring state. But it turns out it's not true. So here's the interesting thought of the from experiment. So that's here, it's an applied magnetic field. And here is a Hall resistance or Hall conductivity, basically. And there's many, so this part, please ignore first. But let's just look at this curve for the Hall resistance. There's many plateaus in the plot. So maybe most noticeable is this one at filling fraction one. Here, the filling fraction is just means for applied magnetic field, you have many magnetic fluxes threading the system. And when at this point, the number of electrons is equal to the number of magnetic fluxes. So here, its filling fraction is 1, 2, 3, 4. But for all these definite filling fractions, you see many plateaus around it. And at this plateau, whole conductance is exactly quantized. So it is now it's just an integer in the unit of e squared over h. So that's basically integer quantum Hall physics. So the rest of my talk is to go somehow beyond this quantum Hall paradigm. But let me first explain the key features of quantum Hall physics, which will be useful in later part of my talk. So what is interesting is, of course, that this number, it is completely quantized, and it is very robust against perturbation. So as I said, energy spectrum is very flat in the electron system with a prime magnetic field, but this quantization is robust. So you can perturb your system whatever you want. So by perturbing your system's energy spectrum, now somehow they get bent. But as far as there's a gap in the system, this quantization doesn't change. It stays some number. So it doesn't change continuously. There's a nice way to understand why Hall conductivity is quantized. So here's the, let's say I have an integer quantum Hall effect with filling fraction one. So now let me create an edge to the system. So here I have an integer quantum Hall effect, but now it is subjected to the vacuum. So there's nothing here, but I have an integer quantum Hall droplet. In other words, filling fraction changes 1 to 0 from here to here. If I make such interface, it turns out there's the one propagating degrees of freedom along this edge. It's completely directional, so there's no electrons moving this way, but all electrons are moving in this direction. Now, because of this propagating degrees of freedom, the electric transport, let's say, if you measure experimentally, it is completely carried by these edge states. And the number of edge states is basically controlled by the filling fraction, 1, 2, 3, 4. So if it is one, filling fraction is one, there's one branch of edge mode. It carries electric current. And since there's only one channel, it contributes to the electric transport in this unit, the quantum of conductance. It's a quantized transport. So here in this side, the classification, it's a state of system in the bulk, and here's this the quantum Hall system with boundary. So as I said, this is the quantized number, and there the corollary of the quantization of sigma x y. It is quantized and it doesn't change as you perturb your system. That means whenever you see different, whenever you compare different states, let's say sigma xy 0 and sigma x minus 1, these two states must be separated by quantum phase transition. Otherwise, sigma xy cannot change. Only assumption I said before is that this gap is open. As far as the gap is open, the sigma xy doesn't change. So whenever these two states have a different sigma xy, they must be connected through the gapless point, which is a quantum phase transition. So this is the rough picture of the space of all quantum states relevant in the quantum Hall physics. So it's just many states. But these states are separated by quantum phase transitions. So we have many sectors or topological sectors. And each sectors are labeled by integer. So a space of all states in the quantum Hall physics is very simple. There's an integer number of topological sectors. That's right. So I use topological in many different ways, but here I mean topological. By topology, I mean it's a very stable. So you can change your Hamiltonian or your state continuously. You can change many parameters: applied magnetic field, chemical potential, local potentials, and so on. But whenever you change, this doesn't change. So it's like a number of hundreds in the two dimensional sea. It's like that's right. I mean that's a topological, but I would say it's in this sector. It's a trivial sector. But quantum Hall state usually in a different sector. That's what I mean topological. So ordinary insulator is like a ball. There's no handle, but quantum Hall insulators, they have handles, so you cannot continuously change quantum Hall state into a trivial insulator. That's I mean by topological. There's a more direct way to say topological. For example, I will explain later, but sigma xy can be actually written as a topological invariant of something in terms of mathematical language. And for that reason, people would call these these quantum Hall states quantum Hall insulators as a topological insulator. Okay. Yes.
Could you say something about what a quantum phase transition is different from an ordinary phase transition, and why it's relevant here? And is it relevant? Are these, for example, second order? Is there a correlation length which is diverging? Or
yes. For all these quantum phase transitions, the order of transition is the second order. In terms of how these, okay, there's a problem here. Okay. So in terms of how these quantum phase transitions are different from the ordinary phase transition, I'm not sure. All I know is just the quantum phase transition, and each quantum phase transition different. But what people believe, I guess, is that all these transitions are in the same universality class. Oh, this is at zero temperature. It's a given by changing the parameter of Hamiltonian, not by changing temperature. That has to be a quantity with h. It's some parameter. Like I said, it's like a height of potential. If you change your chemical potential, you can crush the gap. Like by changing here, changing your level of the chemical potential, you can crush a gap, but there's nothing, at least quantum, about this procedure. But nevertheless, the transition itself is quantum in the sense that it is happening at zero temperature.
Okay. Okay, so that's true. And what is the correlation function whose correlation length is divergent? What are the degrees of freedom?
In the integer quantum Hall effect, that the electrons which are becoming the FS. So in terms of transition, there's nothing critical about it. Nothing topological about it. It's just the electrons, gapless electrons with fermions.
So,
yeah.
So the electrons are a bit more,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Now I want to go a little bit beyond quantum Hall physics, and in quantum Hall physics, there are two requirements. One is two-dimensional. And the other is the magnetic field. But what people found recently, pretty recently, is that there's some physics which has a flavor of quantum Hall physics, but yet you don't have to break ambiguous symmetry. That is something called quantum spin Hall effect. So to explain this physics in a simple way, let me first take two different quantum Hall systems. So I have here I have two layers of quantum Hall systems. So in this layer, I have an electron with magnetic field in this direction, and in the other layer, let's assume the magnetic field is pointing in the opposite direction. So I would label the electron in this layer with spin up. And I would say that the electron will spin down for this layer. So as you can see by construction, the time reversal symmetry as a total, it's not broken, because whenever I do the time reversal operation, I flip spin simultaneously. So if I just do the time reversal symmetry, I exchange it to layers, and this system is invariant, this time reversal symmetry, which is formally written here. So this I sigma y basically just triggers spin. Since time reversal symmetry is not broken, in terms of integer quantum Hall phase diagram, I mean this sector, sigma xy is zero, because the edge state coming from this layer kind of canceled by the edge state coming from this layer. So in terms of integer quantum Hall physics, there's nothing special about this insert. It is in the trivial sector, meaning this state is continuously deformable to the trivial insulator. But it turns out, if I insist if I insist time reversal symmetry, this state has a very strong stability. Just how stable this state is, let me first take these two decoupled layers, but now turn on interactions between these two layers. So now I allow one electron can be scattered into the other layer with some potential, but now I still demand there's a gap in the excitation. So by turning on these perturbations, I change my state adiabatically, but I still don't cross the phase transition. Now, first, let's assume spin is conserved, meaning spin up here and spin down is very defined concept. In that case, one can immediately see that the difference of the sigma xy is a very defined quantity. So although this state is not stable, if you look at the sigma xy, which is the sum of these the sigma xy of these two layers, the difference is non-trivial. And because of this, you cannot change your state into the other state because this difference is quantized. On the other hand, now let me forget about this conservation of spin in the d direction. Now you can mix these two spins. In that case, you cannot define these two quantities separately. In that case, there's a question if you can change your state into a trivial state without closing phase transition. So with this condition, your space of quantum states still look like this. They are separated by the difference of sigma xy up and sigma xy down. But now it turns out if you switch off the conservation of z component spin, your classification is now not integer. But it turns out it's a z2 classification. So that means this picture doesn't apply anymore, but now the space of all relevant space to you is now partitioned into two sectors, only two. That's what I mean by z2. So there's an easy way to see this. So these two, now again, I resort on the edge state. So there are two branches of state, and they form a Kramers pair because of the time reversal symmetry. It turns out if the number of Kramers pair at the edge is even, your state is actually deformable to the trivial insulator. On the other hand, if the number of Kramers pair at the edge is odd, you cannot deform your state into the trivial state. That is because if the number of Kramers pair is odd at the edge, with time reversal symmetry, you cannot write down the perturbations which open the gap at the edge. So if the number of Kramers pair at the edge is odd, there's always a gapless state at the edge. But if there is the gapless state at the edge, you cannot deform the state into the trivial state where you don't see any boundary edge state. That's basically the statement. So now the state now looks like this. And what is even more exciting is that once theorists proposed this possibility, experimenters pretty quickly realized actually this system. So I just want to mention the name of material which does realize this quantum Sinhor effect. It is the Mercury-Kellerite quantum well. So it is a two-dimensional system, but with time reversal symmetry, not like quantum Hall physics. But there is a strong quantum strong spin orbit interaction in this material, which allows the spins to mix. And it turns out this Mercury-Kellerite system is in the non-trivial sector of this picture. And there is the odd number of Kramers pairs counter-propagating at the edge of Mercury quantum well. So basically, this is just an experimental result showing there is one pair of Kramers pairs at the edge of Mercury-Kellerite quantum well, which gives rise to the 2e squared over h conductivity at the edge, at the conductance at the edge. That's the bias voltage. You're applying the gate voltage to the Mercury-Kellerite quantum well. So I think if you are in this direction, you cross the band gap, so you don't see any state. So that's quantum Sinhor effect so far. So here, we go beyond quantum Hall physics a little bit, because now we have a time reversal symmetry. We don't have to break time reversal symmetry by magnetic field. What is actually even more interesting is that you can go higher dimensions. So there'll be a three-dimensional analog of quantum spin Hall physics. Again, with time reversal symmetry. So we keep time reversal symmetry, and it's now in three dimensions. So in terms of quantum Hall physics, you don't know how to realize anything topological, topological in this setting. But it turns out in this so-called Z2 topological insulator, even though these conditions are satisfied, you can still see the surface state whenever your state is non-trivial. So in three-dimensional system with time reversal symmetry condition, again, it turns out your space of quantum state are partitioned into two sectors. And whenever you are in the non-trivial whenever your state is in the non-trivial sector, you see there the gapless boundary state, which takes the form of relativistic fermions. So this just a picture for showing the energy spectrum of the surface mode. So you have many Dirac cones here. It's three, but as before, in two-dimensional analog, in three-dimensional quantum spin Hall physics or D2 topological insulator, whenever you have a surface in the non-trivial insulating phase, you see odd number of Dirac cones. Because they are charged, so it's a complex fermion. So in the bulk, you have a non-relativistic electrons, so it's a complex fermion. Since the surface state it comes from the complex fermions, it's charged, so it's a complex fermion. Also, yeah, that's basically it. I don't have much time to explain this physics in detail, but later when I try to explain all these phases in the unified way, maybe I will come back to this point a little bit. But again, let me show you kind of impressive work of experimentalists. So again, experimentalists quickly realize actually they do find many materials which does show belong to the non-trivial sector, non-trivial topological sector of quantum ground state. So there, we should see odd number of Dirac cones, and in many Bismuth related materials, you see like five Dirac cones, one Dirac cone. They are the image from photoemission experiment. So basically, this is literally the dispersion relation of electrons at the surface. So you see cones somewhat distorted. There's one for bismuth so-called selenite and the bismuth telluride material, and there are five in bismuth antimony materials. Yeah, so here conductance is less useful context because in one dimension, if we have a one branch, it just contributes to the unit, the conductance. But here it's a two-dimensional surface of three-dimensional electrons. So here I have a surface energy spectrum, but whenever you see your energy, your chemical potential is cutting this cone, you have a Fermi surface, so you have a metallic conductivity. So it's literally infinite. But here, rather than looking at the transport properties, we are just literally seeing the cones. Unfortunately, maybe it's not clear from here because a photoemission experiment doesn't see the empty state, but they are nevertheless showing occupied state, which has a Dirac nature. This is the cut of the Brillouin zone. So what you should see theoretically is something like this, with five cones and the experiment scanning a specific cut like this. So whenever you cut this surface Brillouin zone, something is linearly going like this, and something is linearly going down. And this part is not observable in terms of experiments. That's, maybe this one is more clear, clearer because there's only one cone, and you can see both, you can see there's a crossing here. So that's a Dirac text.
In the same cone, but cut in five different places in the Brillouin zone, or that's really five different directions?
They are distinct five cones.
Oh, I see. So why is it a Z2 index? Is it because
there's an odd number? There's an odd number of the Dirac cones. Okay. So that's Z2.
So they can lift in pairs, it's just they haven't in this particular
Exactly. So they can disappear in principle, but whenever you have five cones, what you can do is you can pair and aggregate these cones. So there's always one subarray.
Thanks.
Yes.
What physical quantity is quantized?
Yes. So in terms of transport, like measurable quantities, actually we cannot, so far we couldn't find anything quantized, but we do find some quantity you can actually compute from the band structure, energy spectrum, that is really quantized. But unfortunately, there's no quantized quantity in terms of directly measurable quantity. Here, it's just the number of cones that is quantized. I mean, the even an odd parity of cones, which is quantized.
There's nothing interesting that happens on the edges of the surface.
There is. People are spending more time to looking at more interesting physics at the surface. They can put magnetic materials, superconductors. But if you're interested, we can talk about it.
I'm at the edge of the surface.
Yeah, exactly.
The edge of the edge.
Yeah. So, for example, first of all, there's no edge of edge because boundary of boundary is zero. But you can still make take a two-dimensional surface, put magnetic material on the other half, and we take ordinary state, but then there's actually another gapless mode flowing around, and so on and so forth. Okay, so far we have been interested in insulators, but let me first, as a last part of my introduction, let me just briefly introduce what is a topological superconductor. So topological superconductor simply means that your Gogolyubov of quasi particles, which are fermions, are in the topologically insulating phase. Since it is not electric, I mean, there's no electric charge which is conserved, we don't call it insulator, but nevertheless, in terms of fermions, it is just a gap phase of a fermion. So here I have a Gogolyubov Lujan Hamiltonian in terms of number representation. So I have a fermions, which are electrons, which might come in many flavors, like spins and possibly with orbital indices. And there will be a kernel of Bolyubov-Lujan Hamiltonian. So let me just introduce one example of topological superconductor, which is the P plus IP wave superconductor. So the other parameter, let's just for simplicity, take spinless fermions. So there's a spinless fermion which are paired by pairing potential by this order parameter kx plus iky. And this one is a conventional kinetic term of fermions, non-relativistic fermions. So first of all, it turns out there are two phases in this Gogolyubov-Lujan Hamiltonian. So you can reach different phases by changing a chemical potential here. So if chemical potential is below zero, you have one phase, but it turns out as you change chemical potential, there's a phase transition, and there are two phases. One is called weak pairing, and the other is called strong pairing. So again, in terms of just, if I just take very simple-minded Landau-Ginzburg type description, it's just a P wave superconductor. So one would say they have the same symmetry. It's just a P wave superconductor, which is ordered. But on the other hand, with considering fermionic part of the Hamiltonian, where one would say fermions are more quantum, there are actually two phases. So in terms of Landau-Ginzburg theory, you don't really distinguish these two phases. But it turns out these two phases are dramatically different in terms of Bogolyubov-Lujan quasi particle. So, well, first thing I want to point out is that if you just look at the many-body wave function of fermions, so it's a many-body wave function of fermions projected onto the conserved number of fermions in this strong pairing phase. Correlation function depends on the coordinate of fermions in this way, so it's short range. But in the weak pairing phase, your ground state wave function looks more interesting because there it looks like this Parthian of your ground state wave, in terms of your electron fermion coordinate. So here that is x plus y. It's a labeling of two-dimensional spatial coordinate of fermions, and the many-body wave function is written this way. So it's actually quite long-ranged. And yes.
Why in the coordinates sitting downstairs rather than upstairs? What's the significance of this?
This one. Significant of this is well, first it's a good wave function for attraction because it has an enhancement when these two coordinates meet. So it's kind of preferred. I mean, it's a reasonable function for the attractive wave function. And it just comes from directly from the pairing wave function, and take this and do the Fourier transformation, you get basically this one. Momentum space has a winding. Momentum space wave function have a winding, so the real space wave function does winding too. That's why Z appearing. Yeah.
So what is special about P-wave superconductors? Why does this happen for P-wave and not for?
It does happen for B-wave too, but with slightly different topological character. Here, the symmetry of all the parameters is less important. As I said before, symmetry principle is not that important. So it can be P-wave, it can be B-wave. I mean, actually, P-wave and B-wave is not, it's always separated by quantum phase transition, but symmetry is not that important.
But is it important that the order parameter depends on momentum and how it depends on momentum? Or?
Yeah, that's another good question. It's more like the character of the whole thing of the scanner. So sometimes it can happen that the order parameter is conventional, like S wave, but still this part, which is just the usual electron energy spectrum, which can be actually non-trivial. In that case, you can still have a non-trivial topological superconductor. Yes.
Yeah, I have a very naive question. In BCS, there's an interaction between the electrons, which results in the pairing.
Right.
Here, this is free field theory. There's no interaction.
Right.
So what is the physics responsible for the pairing?
Yes, so usually to get the P wave pairing, you need, of course, attractions. But whenever you are in the, but independent of the mechanism of pairing, if you are deep inside the BCS type paired phase, interaction is less important. I mean, it is already kind of used to form this pairing potential. But once you are in this phase, interaction effect is less important. But in terms of drive, what is the driving force to actually get this phase? I think there's in P wave you have your interaction must be have attraction in P wave channels and so on.
I don't understand. If there's no interaction, then there's a superposition principle. So why is there any kind?
Interaction is needed to form pair, but. If you are deep in the in this phase, a mean field theory is very good. So this is a mean field approximation where you are treating this delta as a static quantity. So in real superconductor, what happens is that it's an interacting phase of electrons. So that means this delta has a fluctuating. So it's actually coming. So here up to this point, I'm using a mean field approximation, freezing the dynamics of the pairing field. But of course, in real material, since it is an interacting phase of electron, delta is always dynamical. But first of all, this fluctuation doesn't destroy the physics I'm describing. But it turns out with inclusion of the dynamics of pairing field, physics is even more interesting. That's, let me try to explain later. So one thing I didn't mention is the existence of H mode. So in these two phases, the behavior of wave function is markedly different. And as before, if you make an edge in the weak pairing phase, there's the propagating mode, which is basically a topological invariant of the system. And here is the propagating mode, and it is in this case it's a Majorana fermion which is propagating because it's real fermions in the bulk. Now the In terms of question of dynamics of the quarrying Cooper pair potential, well, it does many implications. First of all, with mean field approximation, your ground state is unique because you just fill up all the negative energy levels. But it turns out with the dynamical Cooper pair, ground state, there's a ground state degeneracy, actually. There's four states which are degenerate. And there's a proposal to use this degeneracy for quantum computation, but I think I don't have much time to say about it. And also, there's the topological defect in Cooper pair, which is just a vortex of superconductor, but now they obey no aberrant statistics. They are somehow the physics, they are the type of physics you need to specify the dynamics. You need the dynamics of Cooper pairs, but these properties are somewhat just already seenable in the free, mean field approximation of the P waves, P plus I P waves. So that's the caricature, that's the prototype example of topological superconductor. So now, I want to come to the main point of my talk. So now, I think I basically describe what topological insulators and superconductors are, and by topological I mean foreign things. So basically, it's a topological. So if you change your state, certain properties remain robust, and here. In topological insulators and superconductors, well, first of all, they must have a gap. So there's no matter, there's no gapless superconductors in this talk. And these states support some non-trivial boundary states, which are stable. And of course, sometimes you need discrete symmetries, for example, time reversal symmetries. So in quantum scheme Hall effect, whenever you break time reversal symmetry, you are speaking, whenever you consider state with broken T, we should use this picture. On the other hand, if I limit myself to the state with time reversal symmetry, classification is Z2. So, in order to fully describe these topological insulators and superconductors, we need to specify the type of discrete symmetries. And with time reversal symmetry, with this constraint, we now freely change my state, freely deform my state. And we can speak about if there's a topological sector or not. And so this is basically my basic question. So as you noticed, people are finding new topological insulators and topological superconductors case by case, but I want to just see what is the governing principle of these topological insulators and superconductors. Do we find more new states coming in maybe 10 years, or I mean, is it basically the never-ending story, or is it there's the some finite set of topological insulators and superconductors? So. Let me first classify discrete symmetries, because that is what is necessary to classify topological insulators and superconductors. So we already speak about time reversal symmetry for fermions of spin, like electrons. So this is the single particle Hamiltonian, and the time whenever I have this relation implemented by some unitary operator, I have a time reversal symmetry. And for spinless fermions or fermions with integer spin, time reversal symmetry is implemented by this relation. But for half integer spin, I mean, for the like for usual electrons with spin, time reversal symmetry does satisfy this condition. So if you take a transpose, remember this was I sigma y before. and the I sigma y, which if it is transposed, you get the minus sign. And this minus sign is invariant on the unitary transformation. So we distinguish three cases for time versus symmetry. Either it is conserved by this relation, or if it is implemented by this relation, or if there is no time versus symmetry. Now, since I also want to include superconductor conducting quasi particles satisfy particle Hall symmetry of superconductor. And again, I distinguish three cases. Either there is no particle Hall symmetry, I mean, that in that case, that's the electrons, or if particle Hall symmetry is implemented by this matrix C, I put plus sign here. And if there is no particle symmetry, I implement, assign minus one. So I have a distinct three cases. So you can also consider the mixture or combination of particle symmetry and time versus symmetry. So if you have one time versus symmetry and the one particle symmetry, you can consider one, you can invent one unitary matrix which actually anti-commutes Hamiltonian. So that is the type of symmetries I want to include in my talk. Yeah, that is actually that is coming.
Okay.
Yeah. So since I have three cases here, you immediately get nine, and. So you immediately get nine, and if you have both, you automatically get chiral symmetry here. Chiral symmetry here, but there's one case where you don't impose time versus symmetry and particle symmetry, but nevertheless you get chiral symmetry. This SRS is chiral symmetry. So actually you distinguish 10 cases this way. So actually, the classification of discrete symmetry here was originally done by Altran and Thunbauer in 1997. So they were interested in random matrices, and they were looking at different types of random matrices. And there was the three random matrices known before, which is called Wigner-Dyson. So they are called orthogonal unitary symplectic ensemble of random matrices, but they extended this ensemble to include all these 10 classes. So basically, I'm just using their scheme to distinguish different discrete symmetries. Now, there's the obvious question. Knowing there are 10 symmetry classes of fermion systems, we can ask for each the symmetry class for each special dimension, is there topological sectors or not? And let me first show you the result, because that's very easy to understand. So lining up here is different symmetry classes. So for historical reason, they are called these weird name, AA1, A3. They have this. They are defined by these discrete symmetries. Maybe for physical interpretation, I will come back later. Now I have a spatial dimension in this direction. Maybe I can show this. And so how do we see this table? So for each dimension, I pick up one symmetry class, and this Z means there's an integer classification of your Hamiltonian. So you have a space of quantum ground states partitioned into integer sectors. But if it is Z2, your space of quantum ground state has only two sectors. So let me show you an example. So this is integer quantum Hall effect. So class A has no symmetry, and in two dimensions, it is partitioned into integer class. So A2. Is a quantum C4 effect in two dimensions, it's Z2. And in three dimensions, it's again Z2. So your state is partitioned into two classes. And it turns out this can be this can be done in all these phases and in all these dimensions. So, yeah, actually, I'm expecting string theorists can look at this higher dimensional case, but just mathematically, it's nice to display all these higher dimensions because you can see immediate periodicity. So I didn't notice this before, but so I did this for 1, 2, 3 dimensions. That's for dimensions for condensed matter physicists. But it turns out Alexei Kitaev at Caltech, he pointed out it can extend to all higher dimensions, and there's the periodicity, which is just like a Bott periodicity. So you can see it is always sifted. So this entry is sifted like this. First of all, I have to distinguish a complex case, which is this A and S3, and this is A. Remaining case is called real case, just like Bott periodicity. And this is always sifted by one. That's, yes?
Yeah, is there a mathematical reason why you get that path periodicity in the dimension?
Yes, so that's something I want to explain in my approach and the. Yeah, that's I want to say.
That's very striking.
And Alexei Kitaev made more precise connection because he used a crippled algebra to classify these states. But I want to use more physical argument. That's is our approach. Okay, so since I'm running up my time, let me, since I have two more talks, let me explain the underlying strategy of classifications, and I think I keep the details of analysis for tomorrow. So there's two approaches we used to get this table, So of course, since we are speaking about topological classification, one good way to classify your state is just find some invariant. And if you can prove it is invariant, it doesn't change for a small deformation of your state, you're partly done. Because now your state must be labeled by this topological invariant. But unfortunately, this approach up to this point, I cannot. Well, we did this for full generality, but it's not most convenient way to characterize it. That will be become clearer. The other approach, which is kind of physically interesting, is the second approach, which we call bulk boundary correspondence approach. So as we already seen, in topological insulators or superconductors, there's nothing in the bulk. So it's a wrong thing to consider bulk state, but rather you see gapless states, many degrees of freedom at the boundary. So it's actually a reasonable thing to do to classify the behavior at the boundary. That's the approach we took. And what is important in the approach is that near the at the boundary, you see many boundary states. And in all these examples I introduced you, there's one property shared by all these edge states. So I explained these examples, integer quantum Hall, quantum spin Hall, P-wave superconductor. All these states, they are always gapless. So they stay conducting. You can put many, whatever potential you want. It can be uniform, it can be random, but it turns out this state is always conducting. Now in condensed matter physics, there's the phenomenon known as Anderson localization. So if you have a metal or if you have some gapless state, if you put impurities, quantum interference eventually localize these modes. That happens for all states as far as the disorder potential is strong enough. But these edge states of integer quantum Hall, quantum spin Hall effect, Carapiev superconductor, these edge states are exactly the exception of Anderson localization. So for integer quantum Hall, it's very clear because state is always propagating in this direction. There's simply no way to backscatter your electrons from in the opposite direction. There's no state flowing in the opposite way. That means you cannot Anderson localize your electrons. That it turns out to be also true for quantum spin Hall effect. Their states are actually counter-propagating, but if you insist time glass asymmetry, it turns out there's no way to localize your edge state. So the approach we took is that actually promote this as a guiding principle to find the topological state. So whenever you see, so let's look at some states, and whenever you see there's no way to Anderson localize your state, we claim that these states must come from the some topological Bragg state. That is basic idea of strategy. And how it works, I think I will save it for later talk. Thank you.
We have time for a few questions, if there are any.
Are these edge states described by some kind of a Luckinger liquid as well, or?
With the interaction, yes. For fractional quantum Hall effect, it's a Luckinger liquid. But here, I'm not including interactions.
So in that table, if you go to the two- and three-dimensional examples, if you know of condensed matter systems or at least field theories which realize each entry in the table?
Yeah, actually, it's opposite. I don't know field theory for all entries, but I know many condensed matter realization for these systems. Let me quickly show. Yeah, so these are the examples I know. So I already mentioned integer quantum Hall effect is actually here. Mm-hmm. Quantum spin Hall is here. So it's a symmetric class A2, and in two dimensions and three dimensions. Chiral P-wave superconductor is here. P-wave superconductivity is here. And for these red circles, I know examples, but obviously it's not complete. That means we guaranteed to discover something in the future, but I don't
know. Isn't the helium-3b a perfect example where Landau-Ginzburg classification works?
That's right, here, it's here. But again, in helium-3b, in principle, you can change your chemical potential, and you can go from weak pairing to strong pairing to two different pairs. But yeah, exactly. But it turns out for P-wave superconductor, BCS and DC is not the crossover. There's always a phase transition. That is the magic. You have two phases. For S-wave superconductor with conventional kinetic term, BEC and BCS is a crossover, so there's only one phase. And but it turns out for helium-3d, because it's a physical system, so the chemical potential is always in one side. But in principle, in more dilute cold atom systems, you can change chemical potential. Really, then you see different phases.
But with like the untanked entries, the Z for A3 in three dimensions, that's a phase of matter that is still waiting to be discovered.
Yeah, that is the hopefully.
And you don't have a field theory realization.
Yeah, so field theory description is something I don't really, I'm not fully understanding. For example, in integer quantum Hall, you have Chan Simons.
Yeah.
Theory that describes basically the collective motion of the droplet, but for all these phases, maybe there are their topological views yet to be discovered, but I don't know.
And you said that this was the classification for all time now, but if somebody can manage to construct a system with a new discrete symmetry,
that's right. But if I have more discrete symmetries, what can happen typically? I mean, what happens is that you can somehow broke diagonalize your Hamiltonian, because for all these discrete symmetries, that's not the doesn't need a conserved quantity. But whenever you have more discrete symmetry, you can actually just find a commuting matrix which is Hamiltonian. Then you just classify each block.
Yeah. Something that isn't realistic, but if you were to look at supersymmetric theories where there's interesting commutation relations with the Hamiltonian, then you probably get a super table, which...
Yeah, that's an exciting possibility. I'm not including bosons, so maybe it's a way to go, yeah.
For each of the rows in your table, I believe, some theory.
Yeah, exactly. So
I just want actually what I was curious about is all of these are, I mean, the whole table, they all come from some kind of K theory.
Yeah, it comes from K theory. That is a story by Alexei Kitaev. That there's a K theory behind this classification.
So for all of these,
right.
So was he the one that did D equals zero, or did you have a new strategy for that?
D equals zero, my strategy is just to the interpolation.
So you need to find the system in eight dimensions and from that extrapolate down.
That's a periodicity strategy.
We're working on it, that's where we are.
But we're in 10.
Yeah, but this is spatial. Okay, well, if there are no more questions, let's...